Hello, rock and roll rebels, and welcome to another episode of Ramble On with Rosie. I am here, back from vacation, back from being lazy after vacation, to deliver you more rock content. So, put on your thinking caps and get ready to be enrolled in rock and roll high school, because we will be discussing the Ramones today. Probably not for the last time, because their influence is inestimable. Their contributions to music, phenomenal and uncategorizable, and enough cannot be said about this band. But today I'm going to focus more on, like, the backstories of the individual band members, plus the fifth Ramone, Arturo Vega, their graphic designer and lights man, who had a pretty significant legacy of his own that is not often discussed because he's overshadowed by the band that he assisted. But Arturo and the four core founding Ramones are going to be discussed today in this episode. And I just want to start it off with how the Ramones really were. For all of their, like Tommy said, when they received their induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they really were like brothers. For the better and for the worse. I mean, people claim, well, how can you say they were like family when Johnny and Joey didn't talk to each other for, like, over 10 years while being in the same band together? And I'm like, have you not had a big family get together at Thanksgiving and had those two relatives that don't talk to each other because of some real or imagined slight? Because I've definitely seen that. My mom had two aunts who didn't talk to each other for over 30 years. I have only talked to my brother, like, maybe 3 times in the last 5 years. So I'm like, that's 100% relatable. That's totally what families do. They're dysfunctional. And the Ramones were one beautiful, crazy, dysfunctional family of four brothers who shared no blood, but shared a common goal and pursuit, which was to give music the kick in the ass that it needed at the time, and needs even more so now. So, starting with who I consider, like, the most important Ramone, they are all individually important, and the band would not exist without either of them in their specific role, but the band would not exist at all without Tommy Ramone. He literally kind of assembled the Avengers there. But he was born in Budapest in Hungary to parents who had survived the Holocaust by being hidden by neighbors while most of their family was, exterminated, by Hitler. So they end up in Hungary, and then they end up leaving Hungary because the revolution of 1956 breaks out, and, there's a big battle between, like, the communist regime and, dissidents, and 200,000 people roughly leave Hungary at that time, and the Erdelys, Thomas's family, come to America and settle in New York, first in the Bronx, and then they move a little bit more upscale to Forest Hills and Queens. And they're photographers, and Tommy ends up going to Forest Hills High School. At Forest Hills High School, he ends up joining a band called the Tangerine Puppets, which would feature a hot-headed, high-strung hoodlum named John Cummings on bass, later to be named Johnny Ramone. So Tommy's got the Tangerine Puppets, and then they sort of dissolve. And he, after school, he becomes a assistant engineer at the famous Record Plant Studios. He even works on Jimi Hendrix's Band of Gypsies album. So he's, like, got an adult career before he joins the Ramones. It's actually interesting how he ends up joining the Ramones at all, because he had initially sort of put the band together. It was his idea, and it was just sort of like a little project, He was intending to manage them, and the difficulties arise when Dee Dee couldn't sing and play bass at the same time, And Joey couldn't keep pace with the pace of the songs on drums, so they had a bit of literal musical chairs, and Joey came up front to sing lead and left an empty drum stool, which somebody had to fill, and after a bunch of auditions that all sort of failed because everybody wanted to play fancy like they were auditioning for Deep Purple or something, when all they need is, simple high-speed timekeeping, Tommy was like, "What the hell? If you want a job done right, do it yourself." Sat his butt down on the bar on the drum stool and sort of started learning about the same time the other, band members were learning their respective instruments because Joey had only ever sang lead in one other band before, and that hadn't lasted for very long. And Johnny was sort of learning how to play lead guitar. And Dee Dee, I don't think he'd been playing bass for very long. So, all in all, it, they were all sort of amateurs developing their skills at the same time, which to me I think is fundamental in how the band's sound ended up developing as it is. It would have been different had, Tommy been on lead guitar and, more advanced musically than the other band members, and it, sort of would have made an inequity, and instead they were all equally bad when they started. And that's not me knocking them, that's their own description of their early days. So that's the backstory on Tomas Erdely, who became Thomas Erdely when he anglicized his name and then is known to most of the world as Tommy Ramone. Moving on to the oldest band member, John Cummings of that band I mentioned, the Tangerine Puppets, and known professionally as Johnny Ramone. And did I mention that he was a hellion? 'Cause he was a hellion. His teenage years, by his own admission, he was non-stop 24/7 trying to find as much miscreant stuff to do as he could, and trouble was his name. Everything from going to see the Beatles at Shea Stadium just so he could throw softball-sized rocks at them, to punching some kid's dad, to hurling televisions off the top of buildings and not really caring whether how close they came to hitting people at the bottom, to, and slightly more understandably and forgivably, launching the headstock of his bass guitar into the class president's crotch and then claiming it was an accident. Trouble was his name until about the time he was 20, when he just basically heard a voice. He's like, "I don't know if it was God or what." Basically, he asked me, "Just what do you think you're doing with your life?" And he sort of had to examine where he was headed, and he didn't like it, so he got his act straight. And just quit everything that he was doing, and went straight, didn't do drugs, and wasn't an alcoholic, didn't do any of those things anymore, and disciplined himself, which kind of comes across in how he plays guitar. I mean, the man would play guitar and his hands would be bleeding and he would still keep playing. Some of that may be carryover from his not so great childhood. I mean, his dad made him play a baseball game with a broken big toe, challenging him, "I just, what did I do, raise a baby?" And that sentence seems to sort of sum up and profoundly affect the trajectory of Johnny Ramone's life, because he took the tough guy thing to an extreme. First as the juvenile delinquent, and then as the captain of the ship of the Ramones, sort of, at least in the discipline department, which his almost parental discipline did have its advantages and disadvantages. The advantage, and something that I don't think is considered enough, is the fact that some of the band members needed an almost parental figure, specifically the baby of the band, Dee Dee Ramone, born Douglas Colvin, whose home life as a military brat had been absolute hell, with an alcoholic father and, as he described her, a pretty psychotic mother, who, when they weren't fighting with each other, were fighting on their kids, because Doug, if teacher Dee Dee had a sister, and they received a decent amount of abuse from their parents. So Dee Dee got into drugs at a young age, 12 by his own claim. Some quotes by Dee Dee do need to be taken with a grain of salt, because he had a penchant for dramatic flair and embellishment and sometimes outright, invention. But it is definitely true that he started doing drugs at a young age, and by the time he was in his mid-teens, had already gotten hooked on heroin. Something that would plague him, in spite of his efforts, for the rest of his life. And so, it's just, it was a sad fact of his life. But fortunately, when he was in the Ramones, especially John's discipline came in handy because there was pretty much a no bullshit policy, as in, it's best if you don't do anything, but you certainly can't do enough to affect your playing. That's unacceptable. Like, the only time, that's why they kicked Marky out of the band later, who was the replacement for Tommy on drums, because Tommy left because he couldn't handle the mental duress of touring. He was nearing a breakdown and decided he would be better fit for the band if he just stayed to producing, which he produced two more albums even after he left. And Marky replaced him, and Marky got kicked out because they had to miss a gig because Marky was too drunk, and that's unforgivable. And so that discipline from John about staying at least straight enough to play kept Dee Dee, by Dee Dee's own admission, alive longer than he otherwise would have lived. So, gotta give credit where credit's due. John may not be the most likable personality in the band, but incredibly crucial, and also not given enough credit. So, and then Dee Dee, like I said, he had his addiction issues, but he managed in the band and, wrote most of the, not most of the songs. I mean, he either co-wrote, but like they claimed mutual writing credit on a lot of them, but Dee Dee did write more songs than any other individual band member. So, very creative man. He had his mental illness struggles with bipolar as well. So even just between Johnny's anger issues, Tommy's, near breakdown crises on the road, and Dee Dee being bipolar, you already have a decent groundwork for all their songs on mental illness, and we haven't even gotten to the worst case yet. Joey, born Jeffrey Ross Hyman, as if that last name wasn't going to attract enough bullies as is, he also stood at 6'6", with roughly the body frame of a measuring stick, and was quoted by somebody who knew him both as a young man and once he was in the band as having the posture similar to a question mark, and sickly and wears glasses. So there was nowhere to run and nowhere to hide, and Joey got bullied a lot. He also got thrown across a room by his dad. So home life wasn't so great. School life wasn't great because, as he described it, the greasers would carry actual chains, so it was a rough childhood for Joey. Plus, he had been born with what's called a teratoma. It's also called a parasitic twin. It was like a baseball-sized growth out of his spine, containing like teeth and hair, as Marky Ramone, who is a twin, described it. It'd be something like an undeveloped conjoined twin, and that had to be surgically removed when he was an infant. And he had, poor circulation and health issues pretty much his whole life. So childhood, physically he was kind of weak. Physically, he was beat up on, and the worst bullying possibly came internally from his own brain that would not let him be. He had OCD. At the time, they sort of diagnosed it as a kind of schizophrenia. I guess in the early 70s, they hadn't really come up with the term of obsessive compulsive disorder yet. But basically, he had voices in his head that would not shut up unless he did things the right way, whatever that way was, whether it was touching every other fence post, making sure his feet touched every stair on the way down, not throwing out his coffee cups, not changing out of the particular pair of jeans he had on. There was all these ticks that, kept him, sort of crippled him in a way. I mean, it's a mental disability the same way, somebody would have a physical disability of, being born with a malformed leg. So he had all these things stacked against him. In fact, at 18, he checked himself into a mental institution and stayed there a month. And when he had, been under observation and stuff, the doctors basically told him and his mother that, sorry, but your son's not going to be able to function in society due to all these mental issues that he's got. He's, not quite a vegetable, but he's not much better than that. And so he won't really be able to participate in society like a normal human being. Sorry. But Joey still persevered. Not even for the sake of rock and roll yet. Like, he's still getting average jobs, handing out leaflets and flyers and stuff, doing what he can. His mom, who is honestly one of the coolest, most supportive moms in rock and roll history, sort of sets him up in the basement of her art gallery, both for his and the rest of, the family's well-being, because part of his diagnosis was that he had paranoia about both being in danger and being a danger to others. So a little space of his own, she thought, would help her son. And then he finally found where he belonged. His brother Mickey came to see Joey play in the glam rock band he was in called Sniper. And Joey was the lead singer in that band, his first time playing lead. He'd been playing drums before that. And Mickey was blown away because there was his big brother, and he actually seemed sort of comfortable being himself for like the first time that Mickey had ever really seen that. And so somehow, the shy introvert who very much fits the description that Marilyn Monroe gives in 7 Year Itch of like the guy that you overlook at first. I mean, if you can overlook a 6'6" guy, but personality-wise, the sort of shy guy who comes off like they're really sweet, found his comfort zone in the spotlight of front and center stage singing rock and roll, which is interesting in of itself. So that's sort of Joey's background, the ultimate sort of underdog story of perseverance. How with all these health issues, just the physical health issues, he managed to, play over 100 gigs every year. Like, they never missed a gig other than the ones that they missed because Marky was too drunk to play. And I think there was only one or two of those before they fired him from the band. So that alone is just a huge inspiration of perseverance. And people should teach about Joey Ramone in like school to inspire children, because he's such an inspirational story. But before I meander off on making this episode entirely about Joey, which I could easily do, I have one more member of the group to discuss. He's not a member of the band, but Arturo Vega left a legacy almost as important as the original four. He immigrated, like Tommy, but not from Hungary as a child. He was like a young adult when he immigrated from Mexico and came to New York and did graphic design. And one day, this kid pops his head inside the door and is like, "Hi, I'm Dee Dee." Didi had overheard Arturo's music when he was hanging out with his girlfriend, who was Arturo's neighbor, and just decided to like shove his head in the door and say hi, which is honestly a relatable extrovert move that I would probably do myself. So that's how Arturo sort of got involved with these, guys, because all the guys knew each other before they joined the band. Some of them, like Johnny and Tommy, had been in a band together in high school. They were all from the same neighborhood, which just adds to that quintessential Americanism to them that, as Arturo would say, they're American as apple pie, hence why he chose the presidential seal and a apple branch instead of an olive branch when he designed the now world famous logo. So, all these kids from the same neighborhood sort of end up coming together in spite of their different backgrounds. And with Arturo, he didn't just design the, ridiculously ubiquitous Ramones logo that has been parodied and paraded by people who may or may not even know who the Ramones are. It also was, he was the lights guy for the band. He did the, he designed his own light board. In fact, even by the late 80s, he was still both running the lights board and running over and selling the t-shirts and running like the merch stand, which you would think with a band that had been around for like 15 years by that point, that they would have delegated that job to someone quote unquote less important than the unofficial fifth Ramone. But that is the beautiful thing about the Ramones, is they did not give a shit about less important. No one was less important. That is why they are undisputably punk and are also the first punk band, because one of the big ethoses of punk was that there's no difference between the performer and the audience to the common man. Everything from Paul Simonon hacking down the barrier between the Clash and the audience to the Ramones literally not even hardly understanding the concept of less important and all traveling together in the same van, and both the road crew and the band, equality, which was beautiful. So Arturo ran the lights, designed the logo, and did something absolutely revolutionary. At the time, for one, at the time, no bands really had like a logo other than the Rolling Stones, big tongue and lips, which had been done in like 1971, years after they had, broke and become internationally famous. They had a logo. No underground band had a logo. That wasn't really a thing yet. And not only did they not have a logo, they certainly weren't selling merch when they didn't even have a record deal yet. Which the Ramones did. Arturo bought t-shirts, designed logos, had the t-shirt, printed up the t-shirts himself. He'd hire kids from the neighborhood to help him out. Until eventually it got to be too big of a thing for him to handle himself, but he did it for as long as he could. Which was revolutionary at the time, because underground bands didn't have t-shirts and merch. Now, and this is why Arturo Vega has such a legacy, the underground bands of today, your unsigned acts, your independent label artists, it's the merch that keeps them alive, because in the age of digital music, they're not making any money from record sales. And they're not really making any money from touring. It sort of supports the touring enough to not go in the hole. Like, I've talked to the guys who run the merch table, and they're like, yeah, this is about the only way the band makes any money. And I've talked to other people who are, like, associated with the music industry, and that's, like, a huge thing is, the merch is what keeps them afloat. So if there's a band that you like that's underground, do them a favor and buy a t-shirt, even if it is $40. Because otherwise they might not be around. They might have to quit and get a full-time day job. But so that's like the huge sort of unsung legacy of Arturo Vega, is not only did he design one of the most iconic symbols on an absolutely ubiquitous shirt that most people have in their own closet, or at least have seen a half dozen people wear in their life. Like, I was wearing mine out the other day when I went shopping down in Austin. And I had like two, three people comment, one of whom had seen the Ramones. Like, Ramones shirts bring out the freaks and misfits who love music wherever and whoever they may be and whatever they may look like. Speaking of, small side note here as far as the image of the Ramones, which obviously their t-shirt is associated with that. But the beautiful thing about the Ramones is, unlike a lot of like the other ideal, like the look of punk, they never really had that. There was never the short hair, the mohawks, like maybe some jeans and a leather jacket and Converse, but most kids already owned those things. In fact, the Ramones already owned those things. That's why they chose that for their established look, is it was something they kind of all already wore. And to me, that's beautiful, because punk should not have been about a look or a certain kind of thing, especially, something that can be marketed and sold. In fact, Johnny, in an interview in like 1980, pretty much straight up pointed that out, that, the whole image of the punk rock kid was not something the bands had invented. Not even the Clash and the British bands invented that. They weren't sticking the safety pins through their cheeks. It was something shops over there had caught on to try and, make a buck on this new generation of disaffected youth, thus falling into a trap of commercialism, which was the absolute antithesis of what punk was about. So, that being said, the Ramones to me are my favorite punk band, even more than the Clash, and I love the Clash because they really embodied what punk was originally about, which was making rock and roll approachable to the common kid again, I mean, because I, for one, can tell you, I look at, like, my songbook for Led Zeppelin, because I've got, Book of the Guitar tabs, and I either want to, like, burst into tears or throw my guitar out a window, because I'm like, I will never be able to play like this. And the Ramones saw that need in music and filled it perfectly and inspired the entire movement of punk. They were the first punk band. They were doing it before punk became a thing in Britain, even. So, that's the tea there. The Ramones pretty much invented punk and don't get enough credit and recognition. Just about the only decent amount of recognition they got is they got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in their very first year of eligibility, which was pretty exceptional for the Rock Hall to actually be that with it, because they normally make really poor decisions about who gets inducted. Like the fact that Whitney Houston got in and Pat Benatar didn't. And Whitney Houston, God love her, she's one of my favorite female vocalists. She is not rock and roll. Pat Benatar is. But that's enough, because I could do like a whole series on bad decisions by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Fortunately, inducting the Ramones immediately as they became eligible was one of their good decisions. But, their legacy is all over the place. People like Blondie, or rather Debbie Harry from Blondie, was like the guitar that you hear in commercials is it's Ramones, inspired. They inspired so many bands because they were so approachable. It was like, oh, if they can do that, I can do that. And not in a bad way, in a rejuvenating way, which modern music could do with a little of that rejuvenation these days, because what's on the radio is so awful and mundane and horrible. It makes what was on the radio in the 70s, even the most generic pop songs of the 70s, seem like, articulate, complex masterpieces. Like, even, I'm trying to think of like the most mundane, obnoxious 70s songs I can. Okay, even an ABBA song looks artistic and complex in compared to WAP. So, that's all I'm gonna say on that, because I could also do a rant on how modern music has completely ran downhill. But, which, I will say this though, as much as it grieves me, trust me, I have burst into tears about 5 times, collecting my background material for this band because they are a great tragedy. As much as it grieves me that all of the Ramones are dead, all the original four at least, it's a small mercy to realize that they don't have to put up with what has happened to radio. Because they were singing Do You Remember Rock and Roll Radio in 1980, and now, 40 years later, people don't even remember 1980s crappy rock and roll radio. They're so out of touch with what real music is on the radio, at least. Which I'm not saying there's not good artists out there. I'm saying it's the business and the commercialism took over, and that was something that if you watch almost any Ramones interview, they will express, especially Joey. Joey was very articulate on that subject. There's some interviews with him from the 90s where, and even one of the last, the last interview he gave before he died in 2001, he's pretty much, saying that it's the commercial, takeover, it's the business. It's not that there's not artists that don't want to play. It's just those artists aren't getting any radio play, which is a problem that plagued the Ramones. DJs didn't know really where to play them, and also by the time the Ramones were breaking and getting their record deal, it was about the same time that, as Stevie Van Zandt covers in his memoir, that radios did something that basically killed music, which was they started hiring consultants to tell them what the kids wanted to hear, rather than leaving it up to the DJ to maybe pick whatever song caught his fancy. It was more like, oh, well, this is strategically geared towards continuing these trends rather than infusing new music. And that was one of the things that, plagued the Ramones, is they didn't fit any categories, really. I mean, punk broke, but everybody was focusing on, the British invasion, of punk, not the homegrown Americans that had been doing it before the Brits did. It's kind of similar to what happened with the first British invasion, where the British artists, were covering songs. I mean, the British punk artists didn't, but in the first British invasion, the British artists were out and out covering songs by American groups. And it put those groups out of business because everybody wanted to sound British and there was no, it's like Stevie Van Zandt covers in his memoir again, like all the doo-wop groups and stuff were put out to pasture in their 30s and 40s, when they could still sing wonderfully well, and but the acts they inspired eclipsed them and they kind of had to struggle to find work. And while the Ramones never really struggled too badly to find, gigs, they didn't get the commercial success that, say, the Clash did, or later with the more popified punk acts like Blondie kind of went disco and they had some more commercial success. Billy Idol went a little bit more commercial when he went solo after leaving Generation X. And so those things all happened, and even because even the Ramones' attempt at trying to be more commercial, they still sounded like the Ramones, and they still didn't get any more credit for it because they did an album produced by Phil Spector, thinking that that would, help them have a more commercially viable sound while still sounding like themselves, and it did not, help. They had like a decent hit with their cover of Baby I Love You in the UK, and that was about it. So even their attempts. And then after that, I mean, they were a very uncompromising band anyways, and after that they're like, nope, we're not compromising again. We're gonna plow ahead and do as we want to, which they did until they retired in 1996. They were, as Tommy put it, four very unique individuals. And the just tenacity that all of them possessed, be it Joey overcoming all of his disabilities, physical and mental, Johnny's disciplining, force in the whole band, Dee Dee at least curbing some of his addictions enough to perform. They held themselves to like their principles and convictions about what they were doing, even when other bands would have fallen apart due to the a tenth of the internal conflict that was going on in the Ramones. I mean, most bands, there's like this big ego clash and like, well, I'm not getting the decent respect that I feel I deserve, so I'm gonna do my own thing. Versus the Ramones, which were like, collectively, we have created this great and unique thing, and we regard that as more valuable than like our individual egos and, you know, personal feelings and efforts. I mean, even though it's made into a bigger deal than it might have actually been, it still can't be denied. Johnny stole Joey's first serious girlfriend and married her, and all three of them were like, the band is more important than our personal differences. We're gonna keep going. Yeah, we're not gonna talk to each other, but the band, you know, the show must go on. And it did, in spite of that, in spite of all the personality conflicts, in spite of differences in politics, you know. Johnny was a big fan of Reagan, so he was not a fan of the song Bonzo Goes to Bitburg, but it still made it onto the album, and the band still stayed together. You know, Johnny and Joey, who disagreed the most, were the most consistent band members. They never left. They never missed a gig. You know, because eventually Dee Dee would end up leaving the band, you know, to pursue an ill-fated rap career. But he still wrote songs for the band, just like Tommy still produced for the band, even after he left. Which is very much the sense of family, you know, that I was talking about at the beginning. Where even though they don't like each other and they don't get along, they're still gonna help each other out, you know, regardless of personal differences. They still believed in, like, the family that they made with their music as being the most important cohesive factor, which, while none of them left us any left any children, they did leave us a legacy of music that any garage band who gets inspired to play, you know, be it Sid Vicious learning to play bass to Ramones records, or, you know, some kid in his garage this very day, they have a legacy in so many bands. They may not have created any, you know, physical children of their own with their spouses and girlfriends, but they created many children musically. And that is a crucial legacy, and hopefully their spirit can be infused into the modern, you know, kids in their garage making a band. Because Lord knows music needs a bigger kick in the ass now, even than it needed in the 70s. And the spirit of the Ramones is the spirit of kicking commercialism in the ass, doing things your own way, and making your own sound. And it coming from the heart, not from the aspirations to be famous or aspirations to make a lot of money. You know, if it had been about the money or the fame, they would have broken up way, way before, but it was about believing in what they did. And that is another inspiring part of the Ramones legacy. So, carry it on, honor their memories, support your local, you know, bar bands and other acts. You know, anybody who you think has talent, try to help them out by promoting them or buying their merch or whatever you can. Because music needs help these days. And on that note, I will end this ramble. It's good to be back. Have a great week. Be kind to each other. Rock on, and I will catch y'all next week.